Welcome to Meet the People of MCB with Chip Haley and Kay Malmquist, sponsored by the Missouri Council of the Blind. Let's get to it with this week's interview. Everyone, to a new edition of Meet the People of MCB. I'm Chip Haley.
And I'm Kay Malmquist.
And how you doing, Miss Kay?
I am doing phenomenally. So it's a good day.
All right. Well, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us for another edition of Meet the People of MCB. Glad to have you along. Today's guest is someone that I think that you're going to enjoy listening to and to get more acquainted with. So right now, it's my distinct pleasure to bring on and welcome Kenny Norton to Meet the People of MCB. Welcome, Kenny.
Thank you, and everyone, good morning.
Kenny, we're just so happy to have you on Meet the People of MCB. One of the things that we always like to do to start off is to have people to share with us their vision loss. So why don't you just go ahead and tell us a little bit about your vision loss?
All right. My vision loss started, right after I was born. I was born premature. I weighed about 2 pounds, 4 ounces. Back in the 70s, when you had something like that, they gave you a lot of oxygen. So I was given a lot of oxygen, too much oxygen, and that caused the blood vessels in the eyes to, when they got the oxygen, to kind of burst, maybe cause a little nerve damage. And, that kind of started the blindness or visual impairment. And, months and months in a incubator and so forth and so on, all that to kind of get me up to speed as a regular baby and so forth. And there went that.
Okay. Yeah. We recognize that a lot of people have that same kind of eye disease, but I know everybody's different. So you have no residual vision remaining?
Well, I was lucky. I had vision in one eye, still, couldn't see 2020, nowhere near 2020, but I was able to see, a blue sky, the sun, green grass, vehicles, colors, stuff like that up until late 2015. Went to an eye doctor, was having some eye trouble, and we can do surgery and probably bring back more vision than what you had before. Of course, there's always the chance you might lose vision.
Sure.
And so, what do you got to lose, right? Well, I lost. It went from whatever I had to zero, and I couldn't believe it. And, 2 days later, I'm sitting in the doctor, they take the bandages off and shine the light and so forth. And I'm asking him, well, when's the vision going to come back? And he, of course, said, oh, I'm sorry, you can't see. So that was quite a shock. And of course, he didn't know what happened. He never seemed to do after the fact. And all of a sudden, they said I had glaucoma. And I've never had any glaucoma history. And I was shocked on that. And as doctors go, they immediately call in another doctor for another opinion. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And the glaucoma specialist says, oh, yes, you got glaucoma. I said, in one eye? And but the surgery sped up the glaucoma is what their conclusion was. And I kind of thought that was, not the truth. And mm-hmm. and so later in 2016, I decided to branch out and move to the great state of Missouri.
Mm-hmm.
And so I moved to the great state and the Show Me State, and went to another eye doctor, and they did an assessment and said, well, why are you taking these drops? And I said, well, I was told I have glaucoma. And they said, quit taking these drops. Your pressure is like at a 9.
Oh, wow. Wow.
You know, and so, which I, you know, I kind of figured that, you know, maybe I didn't have glaucoma, and maybe that was just mm-hmm. a way of the original doctors to kind of, you know, cover themselves and, you know, maybe not get a lawsuit and stuff like that. It's so hard to prove this and prove that. And so that's how I lost my vision. And since ever since then, I've been totally blind.
Okay. All right. Well, having experienced vision loss at a very, very young, early age, did you attend public school or did you attend a school for the blind?
I attended public school, never got the opportunity to attend a school for the blind. I learned to read and write, print and cursive. And, you know, looking back, you know, I kind of wish I was able to attend the school for the blind only to have better braille skills, you know, because nobody knows you're going to lose your vision. And I used magnifiers back then, CCTVs, mm-hmm. You know, whatever, yeah. binoculars, whatever technology they had. I only had the one good eye, and so, but it worked, you know, for a good long while until surgeries, of course.
Okay. So before you moved to Missouri, you moved from where?
I came from the state of Texas.
Okay. All right. Well, good. Share with us a little bit. Kenny, do you have any brothers, sisters? Are your parents still living? Share with us a little bit about your family.
I have 2 brothers, 2 sisters, and a mother and a father.
Okay. Now, do any of your brothers or sisters, or is the eye condition, is it hereditary, or were you the only one that had the experienced the vision loss?
I'm the only one. I think that if I hadn't been born premature and, you know, in the 70s and was born at 9 months instead of whatever the earlier time was, I think there was a good chance I would have 20/20 vision. I think the, mm-hmm. you know, back in the 70s, you know, they really,
yeah,
you know, they don't know what they are. They're like, they couldn't do what they can do now. It's
right
now. I mean, you can still be born premature, but they've learned so much that they can regulate and, you know, as people say, they learn from their mistakes.
So how were you treated growing up as a young child, you know, in a home with everybody else that's sighted and you're the only one with a vision loss? Did they treat you pretty normal or did they treat you differently?
I would say a little differently. It was, oh, don't do this or don't do that, you know, even though you know how to do it. You know, the fear factor or the you know, it'll be a disaster or something like that. It was very, I would say high or very, you know, it was terrible. It was like a, you know, just not literally, but kind of, you know, just stay in that corner. Don't bother us.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, good. Well, I tell you, Kenny, we're glad that you're here in Missouri. You called it the great Show Me State. I like what a friend of mine always used to say, that Missouri is where the mules are beautiful and the women are stubborn. So I'm going to pass it over to Kay.
Oh, yeah, you would. Well, I remember that, Chip. So, anyway, yeah, Kenny, that's kind of interesting because, you know, everybody has different lifestyles and different families. Some are just like, nope, you know, you're going to be just exactly like us. And some of them kind of, I don't want to say shelter, but treat their kids differently because they simply don't know what a blind kid is capable of and everything. So that, you know, is it's pretty typical, actually. So I assume that the rest of your family, are they still in Texas?
Yes.
What made you decide to move to Missouri? Anything in particular or just a friend you had or?
No, I kind of did it on my own. Well, not on my own, but I kind of, you know, wanted a change of life or change of pace. And so I did research and found out some of the benefits you can, you know, if you move to Missouri, you can get. And I thought, well, you know, that's pretty good. And so I did it, you know, no friends. I actually called around to different churches, asking for, not necessarily financial help, but, you know, help moving. And, I went to this Assembly of God church a few times and I went three or four times in a row. I wanted to hear the pastor, you know, the pastor, but each time I went, they either had a guest or a secondary pastor, you know, and then around the third time, the pastor was there, but he didn't preach and he was going to go on a great deserved vacation. I'm thinking, well, you didn't preach in the last 3 or 4 weeks, you know, now you're going to be on a 2 to 3 week vacation or whatever. You know, so I kind of got upset and, you know, kind of didn't go back to that church, but they had a van that picked you up. And I noticed the driver, he wasn't helping the elderly. And so I kind of yelled at the guy. I said, hey, you need to put that step out. These people are barely getting out of the van. They're almost falling. And I, you know, I could see back then and I yelled at him to, you know, treat the, you know, people a little better and put that step out. And so hopefully he took that to heart and nobody had any injuries.
But, yeah.
So I called that church and as well as other churches. And I didn't know this at the time, but an associate pastor was going to Springfield, Missouri. And so he calls me back and he says, well, can I come by your apartment and, you know, look at what you have to transport and so forth. And so he does. And he says, I'll give you an answer in a few weeks. And he comes back and says, I can take you to Missouri. And then I had to look at kind of getting out of my lease by, I think my lease was on the 20 something of April. And he had to leave on the 20th of April to go to a conference in Springfield. And so I was able to legally get out of my lease without any penalties, you know, so if I wanted to move back, I could move back and rented a U-Haul trailer. And he had a 15 passenger van and off I went to Missouri. I did have friends up here that let me stay in their house for, I think, a month and a half until I was able to find an apartment. And finding an apartment, well, that was the most difficult just task. Every apartment you call either had no vacancies that I wanted it was, I didn't know which part of town to pick in Springfield. So, you know, it was very, a little bit difficult, but I was able to find one and would probably still be there today if it went for COVID. So COVID comes around and the apartment I had was a fourplex enclosed. And I thought, oh, I'm going to get COVID. You know, we didn't know it was airborne for like the longest time, but based on the rate of spreading, and the contagion, I deduced that it was airborne before anybody had said anything. I said, wow, the way it's spreading, it's gotta be airborne. You know, I put two and two together. And then later on we did indeed find out it was airborne. So I was like, oh, I gotta get out of here. And so, through a another person I looked at renting a house and was able to get on the list and do all the paperwork. And luckily, a house came open. And so I just, kind of looked before I leaped a little bit and took it. And that's where I reside today, is in a house. And I like it. It's different, but it's a little more private. And I blame that on COVID, if we didn't have COVID, I think I would still be at the apartment.
Yep. Well, that's cool. I'm going to ask you, Chip will probably ask you about, your work history and different things like that. But I know that you, because I'm a member with you, that you're a member of Missouri Guide Dog Users. So how long have you had a guide dog, and what school did you get them from?
I'm on my second guide dog. His name is Boston. He's 8 years old. I got both guide dogs from Guide Dogs for the Blind in California. Mm-hmm. He's a yellow lab male, pretty headstrong and stubborn sometimes. His favorite thing is eating food, guiding well to maybe get a treat, and very social.
Ah, yes, that's what I have, is a social dog. The social butterfly who would go from person to person if she had a chance. Mm-hmm. Well, Chip, I'm going to turn this over to you, and you can come up with some more questions.
All righty. Thank you. Kenny, talking about the Missouri Guide Dog Users, now you hold a particular office within MGDU?
Yeah, I'm a director, and one of our goals is for membership. They encourage directors to, seek out new members and try to get more people to join MGDU.
Okay, very good. Let's talk a little bit about your education. Did you attend college anywhere?
Yes, I attended college in Texas, and I got two associate degrees, one in general studies and one in computer information technology. At this current time, I have not been able to kind of get a bachelor's degree, which I think if I went to college, I would attempt to get a bachelor's degree and get, higher education.
Okay, good. So let's talk a little bit about your work history. Were you able to use either one of your degrees to find employment, or just then go ahead and just share with us a little bit about your work history?
Yeah, my work history, I was able to get a job at the college assisting in running a developmental computer lab. Back in my day, they had you do like developmental courses like math, English, and reading to kind of get you up par to be able to take algebra, English 1, English 2, and so forth and so on. And so I helped run that and taught new people how to, if they hired new people, how to run the lab and what we had to do. And it was a pretty fun job. Enjoyed it. It was part-time, went to college and did the job at the same time. And I enjoyed it. I worked there for 2.5 years and, met hundreds of thousands of people,
Wow.
And the most difficult task that I think is we had to input the students' data to generate a number that they would use to log in and log out, because they had to get a certain amount of time logged in. And I had vision back then, so one of our jobs was to make sure they did not just go there and surf the internet and kind of do the proper program. So we had to, warn them, kick people out, make sure, say if you went there and you logged in and, he's not looking, or he went into the other room, so I can kind of sneak out and come back. And so we would randomly call roll, and if 5553 didn't answer, we would log them out in such a way where they get no time. And so later on, 5553 would come back and attempt to log out. And they're not understanding why they can't log out. And they, oh, I was here, and, you know, and so forth and so on. And they get really disgruntled. And so in some cases, we might have to call the campus police and mm-hmm. have them escorted out. And sometimes just the threat of that, you know, they don't want to mess with the police, of course, and so they leave. But on occasion, they get really upset. You might have to call the police. And the police are more than happy to come. Mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm, they're mm-hmm. not doing too much, so they're more than happy to come by.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay. So. Now, you know, there in Springfield, you were working at the Amazon Distribution Center for a time, weren't you?
Yes, I, you know, wanted to get employment, and so I worked at the what they call a distribution hub. I worked there for 6 months, and I currently work in the warehouse in Republic, doing a totally different job, and I've been working there to the present, and it's quite different commute wise and stuff like that, but it seems to be doable for the time being.
Okay. Now, Kenny, I also know that you're a member of the Springfield Service Club, but go back and share with us, what was it about MCB or the Springfield Service Club that attracted you and wanted you to become a member and get involved with MCB and the Springfield Service Club?
Well, when I first moved to Springfield, the friends I was with talked about the Springfield Service Club, and I think they just newly joined, I don't know when they, but they knew about it. And I said, oh, I wouldn't mind going to a meeting. At the time, they met at a local restaurant. And so I went there and found out about the club and decided I'd like to, you know, if possible, join. And I joined and been a member of MCB ever since. And, you know, later I found out about the guide dogs, the MGDU, and I was, oh, I like dogs in general. And so, you know, decided to branch out and join that as well. And I think I like the dogs better sometimes, but, you know, it's always neat to see other people's guides and get their experience on guides, because you can sure. learn a lot. Your guide might be doing this, and, you know, they can say, oh, my guide dog did that. I did this and corrected the issue. Mm-hmm. So it's always good to, you know, get other people's experience and what they
you
did.
Bet. Yeah, you bet. Well, before I pass it back over to Kay, can you also know that you've expressed a strong desire to get more involved? I know you've done some stuff on the legislative level in assisting the organization. What kind of positions have you held within the Springfield Service Club? What, do you have a position now?
I currently don't have a position now. I was vice president, and I decided not to run to give another person that wanted to run, you know, experience and a chance to, you know, be a vice president. I've also, at one time was president of the club. And so, you know, if you are new to organizations, you know, you have to learn somewhere. So, in my experience, you could be president of whatever club, and, you know, it takes a team effort. Your vice president, your secretary, you know, all the board members of this team effort. It's not just the president. So you can take that all the way up to our current president and our former president, whoever. They all have a team. You know, it's not just the president that kind of runs the show. They have advisors and so forth. And so I learned a lot from the team. And when I was president, before every meeting, I would make an agenda and was able to get the agenda in print, a printed copy, a braille, and email. And so, because I wanted people to be prepared for the meeting. I think if possible, all clubs could follow that format. That way people are informed. Of course, if you got the email, you got the agenda before the meeting. And then if you got the braille and the printed copy, you got it during the, right before the meeting. I like that format because, it's structured and, there's, little to no surprises unless somebody has like an announcement or something they'd like to add. I like the format, and I hope other clubs would follow that format.
Okay, very good. I like what you're talking about there being a team, because in this organization, a person is no island unto themselves. It does require a lot of teamwork. And I got to tell you, working with Kay as our newly elected president, she's got some great ideas, and some really great opportunities are going to begin to open up, and it's going to take the entire organization. So I hope that you'll keep your ear to the ground, so to speak. And when you hear something that you would really like to get involved with on the state level, hopefully you'll take advantage of those opportunities. There's going to be some stuff that's going to open up this year. So I hope that you will, be available to take advantage of some of those opportunities. Kay, I'm going to pass it back over to you.
That sounds great.
Yep. Okay. Well, yeah, that definitely. And I agree with what Chip said. And I also agree with what you said. It is all about teamwork, and people that are accountable, and you can get help from them, and they're there to help you. And it is not a one person job.
I wish it were, but teamwork is much better. And yeah. It keeps everybody in the loop.
Well, not only that, and then no one person gets overwhelmed because of what's going on. And it's just better all the way across the board. And that's the transparency, so people understand what's happening and stuff. You are absolutely right about that. Well, I'm going to ask that question that I always ask people. And then, of course, if Chip has more questions, he can definitely ask those. But Kenny, what is it about Kenny Norton? Is there anything about Kenny Norton that nobody really knows, except maybe your closest friend, that they might be surprised about or really interested to hear that Kenny Norton either does or likes or whatever? It can be hobby related or anything.
I'll tell you two things. In my lifetime, I had a chance to go tandem skydiving.
Interesting.
Awesome. And I survived. unfortunately, back then I wore glasses, and even though I had goggles over the glasses, both the glasses and the goggles fell off during the falling, and so I never got to recover those.
Wow.
But I did survive, and I recommend if anybody wants a thrill of a lifetime to try to go tandem skydiving, and it's an experience you'll definitely never forget. Another thing is I used to be a ham operator. I had my technician license, but when I moved to Missouri, I couldn't find a way to renew it. I knew one friend that had a ham license, and I asked him, "Hey, can you get on the ham net?" Somebody had sold my radio, when I was in Texas, and so I had no communications. And can you find out how I can renew my license? And well, that never panned out, and so my license expired. So this year, because of all the new technology we can do with ham radio, all-star and so forth and so on. I'm attempting to get my license back. And let me tell you, from when I got it the first time till now, it's a lot harder. I mean, yes. The questions are just
it's long
out there.
Yeah, the theory gets tougher the older you get, I'll tell you that. At least you don't have the code requirements that you did back in the day, but yes, you got to study it, that's for sure. I've been there, done that, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so.
Well, good for you.
If I get it, I'll never know how to renew it. I'll never lose it again. So,
mm-hmm. I need to check and see if I'm still up to date. I keep telling everybody I am, and then the time goes by. And, huh,
yeah.
Yeah. All of a sudden, oops. So well, I understand.
We'll definitely check, because now they're charging $35 for a renewal and $35 for getting a license. That's something different.
Yep, that's for sure. Well, cool. I'm glad I asked. That's great to know. And yes, I agree. I've been in a hot air balloon and different things like that. I always tell people, you want to do something different, go for it. It's a lot of fun. So good for you on the skydiving. That would be a great experience, no doubt. Well, Chip, I'm going to turn it over to you.
Okay. Kenny, I know that the Springfield Service Club will be hosting the 2023 MCB State Convention. Are you taking an active role in that, or you've been able to help with that? And give us some thoughts about that.
At this time, I have not taken an active role. I did help with the virtual one. I mainly did the fundraising. I didn't do the local fundraising. I did the, I don't know if they call it national fundraising. You know, you call different companies and organizations and so forth and so on. Get donations for assisting with the convention, as well as getting people to come to the convention, you know, to either talk about what they, you know, what they represent, and you know, vendors and so forth and so on. So I did a fundraising and trying to get them to come to the convention.
Well, there you go.
Okay. Yeah,
that was,
yeah, very
was
good.
Very successful. Most of it was over the phone, so I like that, or by email. And I really enjoyed it, and got some great resources, and mm-hmm. And it was during a tough time, you know, the COVID, and I'm hoping this year and the years to come, it kind of gets better, so I'm glad we did as well as we did, that's, you know, I like to help people always, you know, if there's a question, so what would you like to do for such and such organization? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And my answer is to help people.
Mm-hmm. Good. Now you will be at the state convention though, right?
As far as I know, I will make every effort to be at the state convention and see how that goes.
Okay, good. Kenny, in closing, something that we like to ask is, do you have any words of encouragement that you would like to share with our listeners? You know, anything that you would like to share that maybe has helped you? I know you living alone, someone with a visual impairment, I know you probably use a lot of different technology. Share with us, our listeners, you know, anything that might be helpful to them in their journey experiencing vision loss.
Well, the first thing I would tell people, don't be afraid to ask questions. And if you want to do something that you've never done before, you know, try to do it. If you want to get that ham radio license, or, you know, you heard about tandem skydiving, or, you know, you've always had an interest in something, and you think, oh, I can't do that. You know, there's no way I could do that. You know, I'm blind. Never say never. You know, even if you, I'm going to throw something wide out there. Say if you wanted to get your concealed carry permit, you know, you're like thinking, oh, I can never get that. You know, I can't see. You know, it's too dangerous. Whatever the case may be, you know, don't be afraid to ask and you know, make some phone calls and you know, try to get it done. Because, you know, blind people, you know, we're blind, but we have intelligence, you know, fortuitous, you know, we're just like everybody else, except we can't see, you know, and I would say go forth and try to get, you know, whatever you can get, and don't be afraid. A lot of people are afraid, and just using an iPhone for the first time, you know, they maybe had a flip phone, and they're like, oh, I can't do this. I can't do this. Well, you know, I'll let you know about the iPhone. There's a free resource out there, and it's called iBug Today, and their organization, iBugToday.org, www.iBugToday.org. And if you go there, you can sign up to get a mentor, and they can teach you the basics of the iPhone over the internet. And so if, you know, people out there, if you're struggling with your iPhone and you feel like you want to throw it out the window, you know, I was at that point when I got my first iPhone. It was alien to me, so to speak. I went from a Nokia N82 to an iPhone, and that is quite the difference. I had the iPhone 4S.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, don't be afraid to ask, because now I'm a pretty good versed with the iPhone. There's lots of great free apps out there that can assist you every day. Everything from money identification to OCR, where you can read your mail, to communicating. As a matter of fact, I'm communicating on an iPhone right now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, like I say, don't be afraid. You know, even if you are afraid, you know, dare to be bold, and you know, it never hurts to ask that question, and don't be afraid to ask. That's another thing. Don't be afraid to ask questions. Just because you think, oh, I'm not going to ask that question, that's a dumb question, that's a stupid question. A wise person told me, the dumbest question you can ask is the question that's not asked.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
ask that question. Mm-hmm. You mm-hmm. never know where it can lead to.
Sure.
And,
yeah.
And that goes for anybody, myself included. You know, we're having this nice conversation. You know, I've asked some great questions. And, you know, people out there that listen to this podcast, you know, don't be afraid, right? Because you never know what the answer might be when you ask that question.
Well, thank you so much for sharing that with us, Kenny. Really appreciate it. That was great stuff that you just shared with us. And I do want to thank you, Kenny, for being our very special guest here today on Meet the People of MCB. It's been really great, and we really appreciate it.
Well, thank y'all, and I hope I imparted some words of wisdom.
Thank you. And ladies and gentlemen, if you know someone that you would like for Kay and I to interview here on Meet the People of MCB, you can have them give me a call, Chip Haley, at 417-540-9703.
Or call me, Kay Momquist, at 608-436-2610.
You never know. You might hear yourself next time right here on Meet the People of MCB. Enjoy your week, everybody. We'll talk to you next time. Bye-bye for now.